The Level Up Coffee podcast is now dialed in.
We love coffee and stay connected to every development in the industry, both here in Rochester and worldwide, to bring you our unique perspective on the ever-changing world of coffee.
We're doing regular tastings, reporting on our travels, and trying to hold back tirades about the forces that make the coffee supply chain a neo-colonial mess. Join us on the Lunchador Podcast Network and wherever you get your podcasts, and stay
dialed in.
Some of the other things that really stood out to me in the book, which I guess we can get to a little bit more in a minute, are like the beautiful illustrations, but also the characters themselves. As you've mentioned, they're all anthropomorphized animals. And for a lot of people, myself included, like animals have a lot of important symbolic meaning. Did you just kind of like throw darts at a wall, like how to pick, you know, which characters were going to be which animals, or was there like a lot of thought and discussion around like, well, you know, these characters have to be a certain type of animal?
It was very organic. I spend a lot of time in nature when I'm back from touring or recording with my different bands. And you know, I think all four seasons in our part of New York, in our region, are wonderful. I don't dread winter. I look forward to it. You know, I snowboard, I snowshoe. When the snow melts or on a rainy day like this, if I can make it happen, I'm either in the lake or in the creek in my kayak, in my whitewater kayak. And I'll hike and I'll mountain bike the trails as well. So when I'm out and about doing these things, you know, I would see all kinds of wildlife, you know, deer disappearing like ghosts into the tree line, fish in the streams being snatched out of the water by ospreys, or all the different creatures, you know, the crows, especially everywhere. The crows are everywhere. And that's an animal that has always really captured my imagination and intrigued me, because they are capable of speech. They can actually be taught how to speak certain words in English. And, you know, just learning more and more about them and how their murders function, you know, their tribal unit is truly fascinating. And I thought they would be the perfect animal that a mercenary group would use for reconnaissance in the place of drones. You know, there's no more reapers, there's no more predator drones in our world of the unraveling. All that stuff was lost, you know, and these animals were the replacements. So all the creatures, you know, they, like I said, they came into the forefront of our thoughts and into the story through things that we saw and experienced. I was out for a walk one afternoon, and the three of us were going back and forth. Well, what kind of animal is Boswell? I was like, maybe he's a squirrel.
Yeah.
And a groundhog popped out of a sandy hill and he scuttled away. And I thought, oh, Boswell is a groundhog. And we built a whole family for him immediately after that.
I think it was the same with Twig. I think Twig originally was
a sparrow.
And
he's a black-capped chickadee now.
And yeah, and we toyed with changing him. And I think that a black-capped chickadee just happened to fly up onto a tree limb. And we were like, well, that's what Twig is.
Yeah, we took that, you know, we saw him as a sign.
Yeah.
Daniel Quinn, the Ishmael, the story of B, it changed my life. And he's got a tagline for Ishmael. And it's, if man is gone, is there hope for gorilla? And I think a lot of that really did trickle into this. It was, you know, if your TikTok algorithm is anything like mine, and I don't even know if I can hope that yours is, but if it is, it's amazing to see the subtle shifts in the evolution of species, whether it's like Carl talking about crows on the shoulders of people responding, or dogs now mimicking the sounds of their, you know, their human parent. I love yous, hearing, you know, crows respond in kind. There's an inevitability to this, right? Like if science is in any way accurate, we just happen to get there quicker. The chances that language and culture are ours exclusively, like we're quickly finding out, like, no, culture belongs to animals. They're inventing ways to be together and to communicate with each other in a way that is so deeply communal. And so, yeah, all of our characters, I do think we're the crows were an absolutely deliberate choice. That was the joy of looking at one of the most advanced and under-discussed species. Where people talk about dolphins, right? They talk about sentience in animals. Crows just get left out of the everyday conversation, and they shouldn't. And then the sugar gliders, that just felt like pure joy, right? That's like, we talked about them at length, and the first pitch was like, Boswell is like deep, he struggles in every possible way you can struggle. He struggles with his weight. He struggles with his self-respect. He struggles as a musician. He just struggles. And then we thought, well, we should put, like, you know, when you're watching like the Looney Tunes and they have like the good angel and the bad angel on the shoulder. And so I remember pitching that idea, and I think it was Jer who was like, maybe what it should be is just a bad angel and a way worse angel. And then we just, boom, like Ika and Aigu were born, and they just hammer him with like bad idea after bad idea that ends up working out in their own ways. But like that for us was just like, man, could you think of a cooler character to have like torrents of gleaming steel pouring out of their carry cases where they ride with this weird dude? But like it all jams, you know, it does work out.
Well, the crow is a great choice for like a wise kind of old man, because they do possess kind of a really creepy level of intelligence. And it's funny you mentioned like the TikTok algorithm, because the YouTube algorithm recently served up for my kids who are 5 and 8 some videos that are really incredible of crows demonstrating their intelligence in ways that are just stunning. And you know, you mentioned culture and animals like crows. Crows do use rudimentary tools. They can like take a stick and fashion a tool out of it to fish something out of a container that they can't reach, and they can talk. And you know, we're my wife and I are raising our kids vegetarian. I'm vegan myself, but these videos I think are going to be foundational to them, because it shows, you know, if they can solve problems in some cases better than, you know, like a 5-year-old can solve a problem, like a human 5-year-old, surely they can suffer as deeply as human beings can, and we ought to treat them with respect.
Absolutely. And that's a big part of the book. It's acknowledging their sentience, acknowledging that they do communicate and use tools, or thinking about very specific things like how intricate the tunnel systems are that ants build out of their sand hills, or let's say a bee or a wasp, how they'll build their hives. Like they essentially are mini functioning cities for those creatures.
There's like something really beautiful, even about your example, Carl, of the bee, right? Like I was watching this thing today, and there's this dude who's like really into like bees, and there is essentially the equivalent of a hive, and they were all just on a street, like just bundled up on a street. And this dude was explaining like, oh, what has happened is but one thing: their queen has died and fallen, and they are there with her to collect what is left of her scent. And I, like, honestly, it was like one of the most tragic and beautiful funerals I've ever watched in my life, because it was everyone at once creating a dome around the thing that they loved and respected. And I don't know if in my lifetime they'll be able to write the tome or the poem that makes me feel in my language that. But boy, that image was enough to be like, okay, a new level of respect, a new level of understanding, a new level of how do we find a way to live together, not just as Homo sapiens sapien, but how do we how do we expand our compassion to something even bigger and broader? Because boy, do they deserve it.
And that's one of the messages of the book. You know, the compete, conquer, exploit mentality that our culture brainwashes us into holding and living by that code is incredibly destructive and self-destructive. And these creatures in the future, they've inherited that. And even though humans are long gone, the wars are still raging because of it. So it's about looking at those mindsets and, you know, cutting the link in the chain so that it doesn't continue to replicate through history forward into the future.
Yeah. And it's beautiful that you connect that also with the family aspect of different animals in the book, that you bring them in, you bring people in, and you show that different animals have different family values almost, and that you're making that connection, like Greg said, with crows, but also with other animals too. And it's really kind of neat that you're giving that for young adults, young kids to latch on to, and that these animals are more than just animals.
And my thought is this, you know, if a younger reader is, you know, they have the book and they're reading through it, and hopefully they're finding it funny and intriguing and they enjoy the adventure aspect of it. But these little seeds are being planted, and hopefully they'll germinate and they'll grow. And when they get a little older, they'll think, well, that's not necessary. You know, vivisection shouldn't be happening. Maybe I shouldn't dissect the, you know, the pig fetus or the frog, you know, and they'll say no to those types of things. And from there, they'll carry it forward into other aspects of how humans are abusive towards animals and not be a part of it.
Well, and this book, I think, will play that role in a lot of kids' lives, partially because, like, I could see when my kids get a little older, kind of giving them this book specifically because I want to reinforce and represent, like, ideas about environmental conservation and, you know, like, animal rights in them. But this book, I could see also playing a role in young people's lives, kind of the same way that another book that was from my childhood influenced me long after I read it, which was Charlotte's Web.
Yeah.
When I read that book, and I also would watch the animated movie that I think was from like the 70s or something. That was like the first time I ever really recalled questioning the practice of eating meat. And obviously, like, my parents were pretty conventional, you know, and they were very supportive of my veganism later when I was like a teenager. But that was really kind of the start of it for me, was seeing the animals kind of cast in a human way and understanding, you know, through the story that they can suffer and that their suffering is like no less legitimate than a human being suffering. Can you like tell us a little bit about maybe some of the books that were important to you in your childhood? Did you have any books that influenced kind of your foundational philosophies, you know, whether it be veganism or some other type of philosophy? And how did those show up in this work?
Well, when I was young, obviously I saw Bambi and then The Fox and the Hound and some of the other films that dealt with trophy hunting. And that got me thinking about how people treat animals and how a lot of the suffering that they're forced to endure is completely unnecessary. And I came from a family that had a lot of people in the military who were sportsmen, and I did not want to hunt and I did not want to fish. So I was kind of the odd man out growing up, but I just didn't want any part of it. So as I got older, my grandmother was vegetarian after she visited my grandfather at work. She went down to bring him lunch, and he worked at a slaughterhouse in Chicago. And she saw what was happening there, and she never ate meat again, and she lived to be just a few months short of 100.
Wow.
So I had her to lean on and her to nurture that idea for me. But our book truthfully is not about vegetarianism. It is not about veganism. It is focused primarily on vivisection. I think that's one of the most important things that I would love to see eradicated in my lifetime, if at all possible.
Well, I think to your question too, I think what's really interesting is that even in the room here, the three of us have a very different way that we express ourselves in terms of like environment and food consumption. And Carl's our like activist vegan straight edge. I'm neither of those two things, but I do believe in the ethical treatment and the ethical slaughter of animals as food for proteins. And the one of the things that I would love to see change is I would love to see governments like ours begin to subsidize ethical animal raising and slaughtering the way that they do the brutality of the farms that just produce tens of thousands of chickens. There's a way to do this right, and if we get dollars behind ethical farming, it can radicalize how people eat and the access people have, not even just to better food sources that are treated well over the course of their life and being allowed to roam and to be free range and all of these things, but also a better quality of nutrition, right, for the person consuming. And so, like, I drive a electric and I work really hard to make sure that the, you know, if I can't know the animal's name and story, or I'm not buying from a local farm, that that's something I push as hard for as I can. And I think that one of the things that the book is really about is not saying, hey, guess what? We all need to arrive at the same conclusion about these ethics together, as much as what can you do that's slightly different, right? What's the small change that you can make to decrease dependence on fossil fuels, to decrease the brutal treatment of animals in factory farms, or to source things in ways that are local and sustainable and thoughtful. And yeah, and then if we get to that point, let's continue that conversation. But for now, for me, it's not about saying, hey, let's all arrive at the same conclusion for any reason. It's, can you be better? Because every time I check myself, there's room to be better. And when I accept those things, not only is it better for my world, but I get to feel better. It is a better world for me to live in when I am taking responsibility for the lives that I consume, right? And knowing, like, thank you. Right? I remember having a grandparent who'd be like, thank you to this chicken, right? Thank you to this chicken who is giving us the thing that we wouldn't have without them. And that taught me something that, like, where you are just like, no, thank you at all. There's a lot of subtlety in the way that we can change our relationship to farming and to food. And the sooner we do that, boy, isn't that nice? And yeah, man, also, we need to get the prices down from a $22 chicken. Like that's a cultural responsibility to start funding the right things and defund the wrong things. And we have been funding the wrong things culturally here for, well, more years than I've been alive.
Also, it's funny because because we are, like Keith said and Carl said, like we are very, like we're all different and we all bring our different, viewpoints and ideas and we all work together. If I'm being honest, before we started writing this story, I don't know if I really paid attention, to a lot of this stuff the way I do when we start, or the way I did when we started writing this. And now, it's like now for me, from an environmental standpoint, like I look at, you drive down the road and you see all the trash on the side of the roads, all the plastics being used in everything. There's a big giant city of garbage floating in the Pacific Ocean. And it's like, how is this a thing? Like, how did we let this happen? And it's like, and I'm a part of that, and like, what can I do? What can I teach my kids, to try to avoid that or make that better? And this has been very important to, like it's kind of cool the way it's changed my mindset, and I would say accidentally, like I didn't know, we didn't set out to write this that way, but it's what happened. And I'm thankful for it.
And when
Ooh.
Jeremy says that he was a part of that, he literally is a part of it because he insists on throwing his trash out of the window in his truck.
That's true.
He'll say sayonara, but I'll just throw it out.
Not true.
No, that's not true, but it was fun to say.
Yeah.
The subject of vivisection is an interesting one, but it definitely resonated with Rory and I because independently of each other, we both kind of drew the comparison with another book we had both read as kids, which was Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of Nim. And
Yeah. Yeah.
that
Yeah.
was like the first time I had heard of like animal experimentation. And it doesn't really get into the grim realities of that the same way that Unraveling does. And if folks that are listening to this grew up and they enjoyed that book, when they read it in school, I think that's probably a lot of required reading in a lot of schools around the country. That is another book that I think folks can see kind of the influence
Yes.
on this one.
And it's a marvelous animated Don Bluth film that
Yes.
young people can watch
Yeah.
too.
Yeah, man. Look, like me, you mentioned Charlotte's Web, and now you're hitting old Mrs. Frisbee there, and it 100%, man. Like, that's on our radar hard. Like, each of us independently engaged those stories either in book or film or both, and it's hard. Those are hard stories to walk away from.
Oh yeah, I
You know,
remember. Okay.
you carry the weight of
Yeah.
you get out of that book, you get out of that film. I don't care who you are. You do gotta pause for a second. And you
Yeah.
pause for a second. And this brings us back again, for me, like, Daniel Quinn was just so transformative, as he's like, man, your life will have these moments where you'll hear the whisper of the truth, and then you'll hear mother culture just ever so quietly creep back in and tell you it's okay. It's not your concern. Everything is just as it should be. And once you learn to hear that voice in your ear, and Frisbee did it, and Charlotte's Web did it, and All Dogs Go to Heaven did it, and the Fern Gully did it, and then James Cameron made Fern Gully into Avatar, and it did it again. And those stories, man, once you hear mother culture in your ear, it's hard to unhear. And that for us was a continuation. It was these are some of our favorite stories and some of our favorite principles. And what does it look like if we just gave animals the chance to talk, minus all of us? What if you couldn't translate it through a human?
Yeah.
What does that do? And that felt like that was a Frisbee challenge for sure.
Yeah, and Don, you mentioned Daniel Quinn a couple times, and
Yeah.
now that you said it, that was another book that was very influential to me. I found that one after I had started, like really getting into veganism and environmental conservation. But I would say that Twig and Scarecrow's relationship, you can see the influence of kind of the Socratic dialogue, I think, as you also mentioned, between those two, that you also see in Ishmael. And it works really well. It really pairs up with the character of Scarecrow perfectly, I think.
Yeah, Scarecrow is making the case for negotiating peace treaties, on interpersonal levels and everything beyond and outside and above that. He always tries to find a peaceful path and to diffuse conflict. That's like one of the constant lessons that he's trying to teach Twig. Violence is only as an absolute last resort, and violence only as self-defense.
I think one of
Yeah.
my favorite moments in the book is when Twig's chatting up Scarecrow somewhere at the halfway point, maybe two-thirds the way through, and they're talking about the absence of humans. And Twig says to Scarecrow, like, if you could undo what Kashmara did, would you do it? And Scarecrow takes a beat and says, no. Like, what happened to the human species in our story? He does not support, and he would not change. And if there's nothing more purely philosophical, right? I don't care, 19th century, 18th century, you pick your favorite. That's the truth in philosophy, which is he has accepted that this world for him is better, even if it's built on on a cruelty that's unnamed. I mean, we talked about that in room. We talked about the fact that the number of Western medical advances built on the back of the Holocaust in Nazi Germany are unfathomable, and many of us are alive because of them. And we have to wrestle with our evil and the way it has progressed our technological evolution and our with the way that our temporary lives are impacted. And we wanted to just give that whisper of a moment where it's like, no, this is that complicated. Like, we all are resting on the bodies of slaves and the bodies of dead and tortured people for generations to have the privilege to even be in a situation to have this conversation. And part of our responsibility is to acknowledge the tragedy of that loss and how that loss has also created the benefit that we enjoy. And we should be regularly internally tortured by that reality. Like, our privilege is bought in blood, and it's okay that we can acknowledge that together. And we need to be more open about that together.
And that's, you know, that is one of the messages of the book. It's that, you know, it can't just be words. Actions have to follow. And when I was younger, I was a skateboarder and I was friends with the graffiti artist. And one of them, Micah, his tag was GOAL, G-O-A-L. And it stood for a generation of animal liberation.
Blew his doors then.
And generation of animal liberation was up all over Syracuse. Like, he did huge pieces of it. And I actually took, you know, a concept out of that line and I put it into one of the lyrics of an Earth Crisis song called Wrath of Sanity. One generation can break this chain. And the discussions that Scarecrow is having with Twig are about cutting that link in the chain. You know, we don't need to return an act of evil with another act of evil. We can, you know, stop that karmic cycle by just simply, you know, not retaliating and not focusing on and acting on our hostile or hateful impulses.
We know hunting for good coffee can be frustrating and time-consuming, and with all the confusing labels out there, it's hard to know that what you're buying is actually mindfully sourced and truly making a difference in people's lives. That's why we put together our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription. Over the last 15 years, Joe Bean Coffee has built friendships with award-winning coffee farmers, ones we trust to consistently bring us amazing coffee year after year. Coffee tastes best at the peak of harvest, which is why we run our program like a CSA, regularly sending you a rotating selection of in-season coffee. You pick how many bags and how often you need it. We do the rest. And you can feel good knowing you're directly supporting small-scale coffee farmers. Go to JoeBeanRoasters.com for details.
Carl, you mentioned Don Bluth and the Rats and Nim animated movie. You know, this book reminding me of Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats and Nim, both because of the characters and the subject of vivisection, doesn't end there. I think the one of the things that really sets The Unraveling apart from other books that I've seen targeted toward kind of the middle grade audience are the illustrations that are throughout. And when I was young, I would have eaten a book like this up, because even though, you know, I you know, didn't want to read picture books anymore, I really do like having kind of the visual aids that show you what the characters reference look like. Yeah. So you get a sense of what their personalities are like in a way that you can't always gather just from words alone, especially when you're in middle school and you know, your vocabulary isn't at the adult level yet. So, you know, for the folks who haven't picked this up yet and the folks who will, there's just phenomenal illustrations throughout the entire book that really make it something that stands apart. Can you tell us a little bit about kind of the design process for the animals and the characters, and how, like, this book also became kind of so graphic heavy, and kind of how that all came to be?
My original goal was for this to be a graphic novel. And I had a friend who I presented it to, who was an artist illustrator, and he backed out of it. I tried to reach out and find somebody else to do it. And they were involved with other things. And then when we started getting a hold of artists, it was so expensive. I thought, well, maybe we'll do that somewhere down the line. Mm-hmm. And we'll write this as a book. And we'll just try to be as descriptive as possible so that it reads like a comic book.
And initially, we didn't have any illustrations. We just wrote, and like Carl said, tried to be as descriptive as possible. And then thanks to Keegan Kuhn, who really helped us out, you know, like there was the first thing. He read the story and he gave us a great review. He said, but you guys need visual aids. You're not going to be able to go to market with it. You know, like you need, and we're like, oh shoot. Well, how do we do that? And he said, yeah, he's like, I go to 99 Design and I do a contest. And that's what we did. We went to 99 Design and we kind of had an idea of how we wanted it to be. Obviously, like we said, you know, we're all fans of Don Bluth. That's what we grew up on. And we kind of wanted to pay homage to that, that two-dimensional, you know, artistry. But obviously we wanted it to be unique and in its own. So we did a contest and we got an amazing response. I honestly, when we did it, didn't think it was going to get that many. And it turned into a job, which was kind of fun. Like where we had to go through and progress people and Zulfikar Rockman, they say, from Indonesia was the guy. He actually, this was his, the hardcover, this is the art that won. So when he did this, we were like, oh yeah, that's it. So then we just worked with him, we would just give him, we'd all agree on which scenes we wanted to bring to life. And we just kind of through email, go back and forth, and he just did an amazing job.
Yeah, he was super responsive.
Yeah.
Again, as Jared mentioned, Zul's just, he's just an incredibly talented artist and really came to understand what we were trying to do. And it's funny because now as we're getting closer, you know, obviously today the book drops, but as we were going through the lead-in, one of the critiques that kept coming through in our early reviews was, boy, I wish there was more illustrations.
And, yeah.
It's so funny because we thought 9 was like really good. And then people were like, there should be one for every chapter. And we're like, we know, but like, you know, that's so much cost and it's
and
a lot.
You never know. Maybe we'll do that for book two.
Well, I'm just telling you right now, we're doing that for book two. But for sure, the illustrations were just, it felt really exciting for us to reintroduce that this generation of reader. And, you know, one of the most, I know we have the book now and that's exciting, but one of the things that's really great about the soft cover production that's only available there is I think the last 6 or 8 pages, you'll get to see some of the turnarounds that Zul did.
Okay.
You'll get to meet Twig in his infancy from an artistic concept.
Yeah.
You'll get to meet a bunch of our characters, and those last 6 to 8 pages in the drop that's available in the soft cover will give you really the progression of how the art concept came together. And we're really excited. We have some really cool tricks up our sleeve in the future, including some really great 3D renderings of Ika and Ayu that they'll be what they'll be, but it's exciting. The art concept has really been just lovely. And Michael DeVito at Third World Studios, who does a lot of the coloring and recoloring, has been amazing. He's a great dude to work with and for. And Zul's art is just, it's through the roof. If you're not following Zulfikar Rockman, please do. And then also, Zul, we love you so much. Please don't raise our prices by 100%.
You mentioned Third World Studios, and I kind of wanted to hear a little bit about how you came to be affiliated with them and Simon & Schuster. I was totally blown away when I saw the social media a while back, and I was like, oh, wow, Carl from Earth Crisis is working on a book. And then when I saw Simon & Schuster was distributing it, I'm like, whoa, holy cow, this is the real deal. Like, they're like, you know, one of the major publishers. You know, a significant portion of the books that we have in the public library are distributed or published directly by them. How did this partnership kind of come to snowball into what it is?
There's this adage that I wish I didn't have to, that I didn't have to embrace. But it, so Jeremy mentioned Keegan Coon, and Keegan was the one who, Keegan directed a lot of great films, Cowspiracy, They're Trying to Kill Us. He's a wonderful documentarian. He's a vegan and animal rights activist, and does some great work in Hollywood. Just, I mean, he's had producers that are everywhere from like Leonardo DiCaprio to Billie Eilish, you know, like he really does tell important stories. And when he read this, he was like, you need an image. And I was going to a friend's like event, and I was sitting behind the table and I was working on the unraveling. I was editing some material that Carl had sent over, and a buddy of mine was like, hey, this dude, and he runs this studio called Third World, like Third World from the Sun, you know, it's kind of a fun little play. And Michael DeVito was like, well, what are you working on? And I was like, oh, you know, it doesn't matter, man. Like I'm just grinding. So like, I'll do my thing. Like 10 minutes later, he's like, no, for real. Like, he's like, you're honed in. Like, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, nothing, man. Like, I'm on this project and I'm trying to get it done. And I think 15, 20 minutes went by again. And he was like, dude, for real, like, what are you actually working on? And I was like, fine. And I opened my phone and I scrolled to Zool's image. And I was like, I'm working on this. I gave him the elevator pitch. I was like, there's no humans, animals are doing the thing, and I'm trying to figure out how to make this crystal do whatever it's supposed to do in the world right now. And he looked at me, he looked at the picture, he looked back up, and he's like, can I read a chapter? I showed him a chapter, and he said, I just want you to know we'll do this right. And then they did. They did. And Simon has been their distribution system for a long time. They've got New York Times bestsellers. They've got a wonderful tabletop game division. There's a lot of great hybrid crossover. They have properties on hold right now with Disney and Hulu. It really is just a wonderful group of artists who believe in art. And I didn't know it at the time, but I don't think we could be in a better space if we had to pay for it.
Yeah.
To be able to work with people who really just love fantasy and they love art and they love a good story, and to have that cheerleading, that financial support behind this project has meant the world.
Well, congrats on that. That's an awesome story.
Thanks. Also, if you're writing a book out there, you know, pay $1,000 and get someone to draw a picture. It is worth 1,000 words. In our case, it was worth 68,000 words. So.
And my appreciation of the character Boswell, I think, was greatly enhanced by the illustrations of him. Like, I kind of had a good sense for how I thought, like, Scarecrow ought to look and some of the other characters. But Boswell, like, his personality is so visual that the picture really drives it home, I think, for the readers. So, and it, you know, it reminds me quite a bit of this other book targeted toward the same audience called Hugo. I think it's called like The Incredible Invention of Hugo Cabret, but people just call it Hugo. And that's another book it's a chapter book, but it's just so, the story is really just enhanced by the frequent illustrations throughout the book. So this book also reminds me of that one. If anybody who's listened who has kids or who maybe has read that one themselves, there's some similarities, maybe not in like character or tone, but just in like the format and the way that the visuals enhance the story and vice versa.
Oh, heck yeah. Thank you. That's a flattering comparison.
I think the really beautiful thing too, even with the artwork, is that I believe you're going to capture folks like Greg and I that just feel drawn in to how those characters look, like this early Disney Robin Hood meets Rats of Nim vibe.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
That immediately caught my attention and just made me want to pick it up and read it. So I think when it's on shelves, people just will gravitate it that are, you know, late 30s, 40s, 50s that grew up with that, they're going to latch on to that. And I think that's something that they're going to want to share to their kids once they start reading this book.
Oh, thank you, man. I mean, your lips to the book God's ears, right? That's
that's our hope.
That was the, our, yeah.
So you've mentioned that you've got two other installments that are coming out next year and then the following year. Has there ever been, have you like thought of any consideration to like an audiobook format or anything like that?
Yeah, so I think I am allowed to say this for the first time.
All right. Oh, breaking news, let's go.
Yeah, so we've done some chats with some folks, but this is the first time I think I'm legally allowed to say this. We've been very fortunate. Recorded Books has picked up the project and is currently in production to release audio for us.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Yeah, we're just thrilled. They sent over the voice reader and we were like, it was an easy sell because like the dude did like the voice of like Dooku or something in a Star Wars book.
Yeah.
We're like,
yeah!
So we're very excited about the partnership with Recorded Books. And if that's not May 20, it will be shortly thereafter. And yes, the audio is that a process, but yes, en route, coming to you. So you can listen to it everywhere you go.
Well, I'm excited to hear that because that'll open it up, the book, to a whole new audience that might not have found it through reading. And as a librarian, I like to think everybody likes reading as much as I do and as much as I encourage people to do. But there's a lot of people that they're just, their pattern of life is so busy, they're only listening to audiobooks. And it's something that's really, really interesting because like in the library, you know, most of our physical collection is print books. And that's what people want to check out from the library. But when you switch over to the digital collections that a lot of libraries have now, you know, it's like 40% of the checkouts in some cases are the audio books. And it's because it's just so easy to consume an audio book now that we all have like smartphones in our pockets. So, you know, I guess technology's ruined society in a lot of ways, but in some ways it's helped us consume more books. So I'm delighted that you're going to have an audio book version. Because I know there's going to be young people that, you know, they just aren't picking up books, but they'll hear it. And some of the ideas and the philosophies that are captured in the book will resonate with them through that medium.
Yeah, we're super excited to be working with Recorded Books. You're running the library side of things. And their imprints on a vast percentage of what's produced in the United States. And to be able to work alongside of them and to have this go through their channels is super rewarding and fulfilling. And, you know, it's funny, the lady we work with, her name's Andy, Recorded, and just a wonderful person and has been in the game a long, long time. And she said, this is the most excited she's been to work on a mid-grades book since Redwall. And
nice.
How funny, right? To think that the journey for her in so many ways is like, you know, like,
yeah,
to be bookended in this moment, and also to be compared to something that's got just for me that level of grandeur and that level of magic was flattering in a way that, you know, it was easier to get up today, that's for sure.
So I saw on your social media, which we should probably have you talk about, and so folks can follow that. But I saw on your social media you have some live events coming up. Like a mini book tour. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Like I saw you're appearing at the Clay, New York, Barnes & Noble, I think. What is it, on May 24th? Is that the date for that appearance?
It is, yeah.
The first thing we're going to do is this Saturday, we're going to be at the Book's End from, I think, 2 to 3, and that's on James Street in Syracuse across from the Palace Movie Theater. And that bookstore is very close to the neighborhood where I grew up. And when I was a kid, I would ride my skateboard from my parents' house to that bookstore. And that's where I would buy different covers of The Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit, or collect the Oz books, or the ones that went beyond L. Frank Baum, the Ruth Plumley, Thompson Hobbs books, and the Choose Your Own Adventure books. So, I mean, for us to be debuting at that bookstore is pretty special for me because it's always been a treasure trove of, you know, science fiction and adventure for me.
Yeah, we'll also be at Burning Books out in Buffalo. They kind of specialize in the books you're not supposed to read.
Yeah.
And it felt beyond flattering for them to be like, you're right, this is one of those. And man, what a treat. We'll be at the Clay Barnes and Noble. We'll, as the summer progresses, we're also working with Media Masters Pub, and they're setting up some work for us to go regionally. So we'll probably be on a little Amtrak tour through the Northeast. So we're looking forward to that. We'll be doing Retro Game Con in upstate New York, hanging out with those good folks. The bulk of May, and then really through June and July and August, we'll be somewhere. So yeah, please tune into the social. We're on Instagram at The Unraveling Book. You can find our website, just theunravelingbook.com, at 3WS, Third World Studios. Heck, if you're bored, just type in the Council of Crows into Google. You'll find us one way or the other. We're up and ready for you. So yeah, we're very excited. The acceptance from people to have us out and to hear the story has really just been overwhelming and flattering and kind. And now all we got to do is just not suck.
Yeah. We'll try.
Learning books from Buffalo actually had a presence and a table at the Earth Crisis show that we
did
at the Lost Horizon maybe 2 years ago when Vegan for the Animals record came out. So it'll be
cool. I was going to ask if that was, I thought that was the same distributor, and I follow them on social media too. Of course, I notice all things books related. Mm-hmm.
They're a great bookstore. They're awesome.
Great bookstore.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it.
Also, it's an exciting time right now. The bookstore is on the rise. Barnes & Noble just announced more stores coming into existence, and the way that people are engaged in listening to and reading books again, it felt like a thing that was going to die a long time ago, and come to find out it's having a great moment of resurgence and popularity. Even from a classroom perspective, there's a huge difference between books assigned and books read. I might assign a book and get 50% of kids to read it, but the other 50% are reading things. They're just reading what they want.
Yeah.
And it's exciting to be at a pivot like that in real time and be like, all right, maybe I don't have to talk about book X, but I can definitely meet you where you are with what you're reading. And whether it's the high fantasy or fantasy, or even just like the hockey romance and the resurgence of just finding the romantic genre like booming like crazy. I don't care what it is that gets people back into pages and into listening, but man, it's so wonderful. It's really great.
Yeah.
It's a great time for books.
I can attest to that. I mean, besides Greg is involved with libraries, but I own a coffee shop and we don't have Wi-Fi, and that's super intentional. It'll be 10 years this coming year. And
that's cool.
I notice continually that people are reading all the time, but not only are they reading books, they're connecting with others that are reading books, which is awesome. And as well as people are coming in to read together. Like it's their time just to sit together and read and share when they find something amazing to share with each other. And I think that's, you knocked it out of the park. I think people want to use their imagination beyond their screens and their phones that they're absorbed and surrounded by.
That's actually one of the reasons why we set out to write the story to begin with. Just to show the kids, like our kids, like, hey, like, you don't have to recycle content, over and over again, or just stare down at your phones. Like, use your mind, and if you don't know how to do it, just figure it out, and that's what we did, and I'm glad to hear that, more and more kids, I mean, like my kids, they're avid readers, but my wife was telling me, just as Keith said, with book talk, they're being so big. I had no idea because I don't generally pay attention to social media as often. But when I heard that, I was like, it really excited me because there's nothing more, disheartening than watching another bookstore close. It just, it's a real bummer. But to see I went into Books End last weekend for Independent Bookstore Day, and just to see how busy it was just, it really did. It brought a lot of joy.
It's a good time to be a book.
All right. Well, I guess, you know, I want to be respectful of everybody's time but I wanted to give you all the opportunity. Are there any things you were hoping to speak to about this book, the creation or the themes behind it that we haven't gotten to through our conversation?
I guess one thing I definitely want to make sure it's said, and it has been, so I guess I want to stress it. Like, this book is not just for middle grade readers. Like, I think it's for anyone who is a fan of science fiction or high fantasy or dystopian. Mm-hmm. It's a fun adventure story. And I love these characters. My dream is to see this animated. My dream is to see these guys as plushies or figures. Like, I'm not afraid to say that. You know, I want this out in the world, and I hope that young people will enjoy it for the adventure that it is, but return to it for some of the philosophical points that we try to push across. And more importantly than anything, just simply choosing to be kind towards animals.
Common Thread is co-hosted by Greg Benoit and Rory Van Grohl, with creative support from Rob Antonucci. Follow us on Instagram at Common Thread HXC Podcast for news and updates. Contact us at Common Thread HXC Podcast at gmail.com. Common Thread is a part of the Lunchador Podcast Network. Visit lunchador.org for more information on other great podcasts.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.